Hi, this is Lori, your host of Happiness Hangout, a space to come and elevate your happiness levels. You, me, and our guests will discuss and help you apply happiness to all aspects of your life, even if you're already happy. Get your daily boost of information to help you feel your best.
Well, hello, everyone. This is Lori at the Happiness Hangout, a place and space to help you feel your best. Glad you could be with us. This is our first live show back in a very long time. So we are excited to be talking today about how to get through adversity and challenges in a better way. We tackle this topic quite a bit on the Happiness Hangout, but hearing different people's perspectives is always a good thing. And with that, today we have our guest, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about him. His name is Michael Russ. He's a career sales professional, international best-selling author, speaker, trainer, musician, and world traveler. His current international best-selling book is Zero Adversity, Three Steps to Freedom, Fulfillment, and Creating an Authentic Life, where he reveals a deceptively simple and highly practical method of approaching and processing life's challenging events before they become disruptive, resulting in more time, happiness, freedom, productivity, abundance, and fulfillment in your life. Michael inspires people to master their inner conversation and approach life with a sense of wonder, inspired action, creativity, joy, and hope. Michael Russ, welcome to the Happiness Hangout.
Thank you so much, Lori. Happy to be here.
Great. So glad to have you. Well, you know, I always like to start off by just having you tell us just a little bit. Give us an overview of your book, Zero Adversity. Tell us in general what it's all about.
Well, Zero Adversity is something I've been living for about 30 years, and professional sales, commission only, a lot of stress in that area. And most of it is, actually all of it, is self-imposed. And I discovered some things. Inner conversation can add to the mix as an invisible form of adversity. So Zero Adversity is kind of the culmination of five other books that I've written, a couple on the inner conversation, self-talk. I wrote a golf book related to life, and a book for salespeople that covers a couple of the things. But Zero Adversity is really the culmination. So I like to develop methods of doing things, steps or processes that I can use, that I can go 1, 2, 3 when things happen. And Zero Adversity came about as a way of perceiving, responding, and letting go of events. We encounter events on a daily basis, and it's not really big events. It's the little things, so the losing of your keys, the misplacing of your cell phone, the car won't start, the tire's flat, you encounter a traffic jam. These are the things that disrupt happiness. It could be an argument with or disagreement with your spouse, your mate, or significant other. Whatever it may be, these are the little things that stack up to become big things, because happiness is something you experience in the moment, and in the moment, generally, a lot of people aren't there. They're dealing with something. So this process, this method I developed, is a way of actively, consciously, intentionally processing little things that occur so that the happiness that you experience is more sustained. And the process is very simple. It's perceive, respond, let go. Even the book is designed to be to not be adverse to people. It's only 66 actual reading pages. I keep things short, sweet, simple, to the point, stories that illustrate what I'm looking to convey. And it's something that anybody can read in a couple of hours, and it can really change their life and really up their happiness quotient.
Well, that is so important. You know, when I do my presentations around happiness, sometimes it's corporate, sometimes it's different groups that are there for different reasons. And we do talk a lot about, especially in the corporate, when I do my happiness at work presentations, about you're so resilient when you can let things go. Those are the most resilient people. And not to take things so personally, but sometimes, boy, our egos, Michael, get so caught up in personal and work that we can't see past that ego. And right. that is what gets us in trouble. So I'll tell you, I've been reading a lot of Eckhart Tolle over, you know, about how he's gotten rid of the ego, mm-hmm. Has worked his whole life to do that. And
I sure as heck still got mine, but it's good to be conscious of it, because I think that that ego is what gets us into a lot of trouble.
You're right. Ego is something in the book. I talk about our need to be right. We have to give up our need to be right all the time. That the ego situation, the ego comes up, usually creeps into the picture when you have your guard down. And it kind of seeks to knock you off your rocker with something. We have to recognize that that is exactly what's happening. Awareness and the knowledge of what the ego can do can really go a long way to helping you maintain more sustained happiness and fulfillment and joy in what you're doing. And then you can, you know, listen, happiness, obviously, we know is, well, maybe it's not obvious to some people, but it's something we generate within. And I find a lot of people that I know, we live in a consumer-based society. So marketing is coming at us from every possible angle. And that marketing seeks to tell us that we can't be happy without that product, that thing, that service. And what we have to do is turn that off. We have to recognize it for what it is. It's a constant drone of a message that you are not you're not whole without this thing, this product, this service. And so when you – and the ego will tell us that as well when we have our guard down. Our friends happen to pattern that message, television shows, movies, whatever. They all sort of beat that drum of that message, because that's what gets you to continue watching. And so I deal with the ego by just stepping back and saying, you know what, examining my need to be right or correct or to judge a situation. That's the first place I go.
And, you know, I guess looking at your career, you know, you were a career sales professional. What got you to the point of having the passion and desire to work in this field of helping people to let go of adversity? Did it have to do with your upbringing, your work career? How did you get to this point where you started writing about this?
Well, it's interesting. That's an excellent question. One of the things that that led me to this path is that I've always been someone who other people have come to when they've had issues. I mean, I can remember in high school, I'm sitting next to a complete stranger, a young lady sitting next to me in a geometry class, and she looks over at me and she starts telling me about the problems with her boyfriend. And I'm sitting here, I'm looking around, and I'm going, why does this person trust me with her most personal information? People have always done that. I can sit down with somebody and within 15, 20 seconds, they're telling me things that they've never told anyone, or they wouldn't tell their inner circle of friends. Now, I can tell you also that in the career, career as a salesperson, I've spent a lot of time. I've had clients that I've had for 30 years, and one of the interesting things about it is we've become friends, and I have not only been their confidant, their salesperson for the products and services that I offered, but I was also their confidant. They would tell me things, and I would help them out. And I was in a kind of sales career where that would scare most people. I would frighten them away, and they'd run in the other direction. But imagine you sit down, you have a desk, your job is to cold call and to find people who would like your product or service. It's a very scary thing. Now, secondarily, there was no paid sick leave, no paid vacation. It was 100% commission, and there was no safety net. Now, that would scare the blazes out of most people. And for 30 years, month to month, I have no idea what my income will be at the end of the month. And that, and you have to plan a vacation. You have to, when you're not there, no money is made. There is nobody to create your income. So I looked at it this way. I'm there to, I believe in one thing. You have to give in this world in order to get. If I give people what they want, exactly what it is that they want, I will automatically get what I want. So I don't have to worry about that. That principle always works for me. So I put the client first, the people I work with first, and then I work from there. Now, if nothing happens that day, and this is the scary part for most people, if they go to work and they spend 8 or 9 hours working and have nothing to show for it, it can scare the living blazes out of you. Because then your mind can do this extrapolation where you're projecting out into the future, creating what Eckhart Tolle calls, you know, that taking yourself out of the moment. In other words, bringing the future into the present moment, and that future is fear. So now you're fearful in this moment. And mm-hmm. so The key is to remain in the moment. So I would simply tell myself, look, there are 30 days in a month. Let's not get, you know, my inner conversation would be directed to say, I can do this. This is just a day. This does not define me. This day of not making any income doesn't define who I am. I'm still happy. I'm still this guy. And I'd go home and I'd be with my wife at the time and we'd hang out. We'd go do things. You have to have a firm faith and belief in yourself and what you can do in the process and use basic principles of manifestation, which are believing that you already have what it is that you're looking for. My income is already there. All I have to do is go through the steps to make it real here in the moment. And that's what I did. And so even today, where I still, I was going to Europe for 2 weeks a month. I was literally getting on a plane, flying to Europe. I'd spend 2 weeks in Europe and I'd come back and I would make all the income I made in 30 days in 2 weeks. I did that for 2 years.
Wow.
And that's a lot of faith in yourself to be able to do that. Now, I didn't necessarily disconnect completely with my clients, but basically, I'm in Europe. You can't call me. You have to email me. My assistant has to call me if you need me. This is the kind of way that this is, you know, living, getting up in the morning with a wonder set, living with wonder. That is what I love to do. And that's what I love to teach people. How do you do that? You get up in the morning, you're in the moment and you're like, what really cool thing is going to happen to me today that's going to shift my life into a different direction? Is it going to be something I read? Is it going to be somebody I meet? Is it going to be something I see on maybe a television or a news program or a documentary? What is it that's going to shift my life in a new direction? That's the way I wake up each and every morning. And I don't worry about money and whether I'll have enough, whether I'll make enough that month or that day. Many days right now, I got to tell you, I work about 4 days a month now. I work 4 days a month to create a month's worth of income for myself. And I have actually 25% of the clients I had 4 or 5 years ago. So I believe in myself. And I think that the scarcity model, that is not something that I embrace because a lot of people, you know, scarcity can creep in. And, you know, not being, feeling that you lack happiness or never will be happy, that's a scarcity thought virus. And there are these various thought viruses that people are operating under on a daily basis. So for me, I just live this stuff. So it was easy to start writing about it. I just quantified what I was doing. I sat down and I said, well, what am I doing? How is it working for me? And I started quantifying the self-talk angle. I came up with 5 steps to great self-talk, to assessing your self-talk, to creating new self-talk and actually living it. I am a person that will resist at all costs say anything negative about myself. So it just doesn't happen. It's not a part of my thought process anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you, everything that you've just said, people dream about doing. And obviously it can be done because you're doing it and some other people are doing it. Mm-hmm. And that is something that I think, you know, is very valuable to read your book. And the thing is, you have to practice too. You know, I grew up a worrier and a warrior too, but a worrier. And, you know, I've spent years working through that. I still work through it. I'm about 100 times better than I was 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. But that can, you know, you're right. You have to have a solid belief in yourself. And that it's sometimes for people, you know, they have to take it little steps at a time. So I guess for those people out there, our listeners who do worry and aren't nearly to the point where you are, what is a good like first step? I mean, you've got concepts of zero adversity and you had that 3-step process. Either walk us through that or tell us about like what's the first step you take and maybe go through a few steps with us that you can take. Sure. to start that process or to move on from where you are.
I would love to. Very simply put, everything begins with our perceptions. And our perceptions literally write the script for everything that follows. Everything. The way we feel, the way we think, and the way we act and respond. So the first step of zero adversity is perceive. Because we literally have a choice as to how we actually perceive things, although people will simply say, no, that's the way it is. No, you can choose to actually see something as neutral, which is just something that happens. And we do this all the time when we watch television. It's just something that happens. You know, the earthquake in Italy is something that has happened. Now, do we invest our time and energy and personal resources in that particular event? We have a choice as to whether to do that or how we actually engage that event. And we have a choice as to whether we do or don't. And so this every event that we have that happens. I'll tell a story in a book where I carry two cell phones for two different businesses. I left both of them on top of my girlfriend's car one evening as I was unloading her car. We'd come home together and I put them on top of her sunroof. And the next morning, I was wondering where my cell phones were. And I picked up the landline and I called them and I'm going, no response, whatever. And then it suddenly dawned on me that both of those cell phones had been on top of her car and she's long gone.
Oh, God.
So I'm like, okay, let me. So I said, okay, let's not panic because that's not what I do. Let's just look at this. I can perceive that event as the absolute worst thing that could ever happen to me because those are the phones my clients called me on, right? And so I'm going, oh, God, you know, again, you can extrapolate out, you know, you can take it to its nth degree of disaster, or you can simply say, okay, this has happened. And I teach people in the book something very simple. If you choose to perceive something as just simply an event, the next basic step is, what can I do? You got to ask yourself this question. What do I have control of here? And there's only three things you have control of: your thoughts, words, and actions. That's it. You can't go back and change the event. You can't change any people with relative to the event. You can't change anybody else's actions with regard to the event. You can only manage your own thoughts, words, and actions. And you have to go there. Okay? So for me, I said, okay, this has happened. I can't do my back. Let's not, you know, I can go out and I can rant and rave. I will tell people, I spend 5 seconds ranting and raving. That's it. I get it out of the way because it's good to let it out, right? You yell at the top of your lungs, you know, but you don't say, you stupid idiot, how could you do, you know, that's not what you do. You don't beat yourself up about it. It just happened. So I got in my car and I started driving. I said, I know the way that I think she went. And so I'm going to drive down my neighborhood street and I'm going to keep looking. And I'm going to see if I can find these, where these cell phones slid off the car. And I did find them, and they were on the highway.
Oh, no, you are kidding.
She'd made a – well, it's a sort of a Highway 98. It's a two-lane highway, four-lane highway, two lanes going one way to the other, and it's about a 55-mile-an-hour thing. So I made – and it's just literally outside the opening of our neighborhood. So I made a right turn because I didn't see him in the neighborhood, and I said, well, she wouldn't have gone fast enough through the neighborhood, so I made a right, and this is what I wasn't 50 feet down, and there's the first one. I pulled the car over off the side of the road. I got out. I waited for the cars to come by. I went out. I picked that phone up, and then I walked up a little bit further and found the other one. Both had been run over by vehicles and thrown to the side. SIM cards totally destroyed. So I figured, okay, I found the phones. Good for me. Let's get back in the car. And let's figure out plan B, which is how quickly can I get these phones replaced? I went back home, called my insurance for the phone because, you know, most people pay that. And then I said, great. Now, what am I going to do today? Well, I have a message machine. I think I'll go play some golf because I can't do any work. So I'm not going to sit around here and lament about whether and beat myself up about what I did and why it happened. And get on social media with a bunch of people. I just basically put an email that I'm out of the office today. And then I went out and played golf. And the next day, I had new cell phones by FedEx. I went down into the cell office and I had them reprogrammed. And then I checked my voicemail and called back people who couldn't reach me. Now, basically, most people would freak out for the entire day. I don't like to waste a day freaking out. I don't like to waste a moment freaking out if I don't have to. And that's what this process, this simple practical process does, is it brings you back to reality, brings you back into the moment so that you can take appropriate responsive action to events that occur. Now, I'm talking about the simple cell phone thing. I'm talking about the death of my best friend from high school. 3 weeks ago, my other best friend, who was the best man at my first wedding, he passed away suddenly. So, you know, when you get into your late 50s, people start passing away from one thing or another. You're reminded of your own reality, your own mortality, excuse me. So what's interesting is it doesn't matter what the event is. You always have to go back to that one question and ask, what can you manage or control about this event? And if you can't control anything about it, you simply have to let it go. And that's whatever the event. So for I'll give you another example of, let's say, there's earthquake in Italy. It's really it's awful that happened. It's a tragic event for the people who are there experiencing it on a personal level. And although it's what we call an impersonal event, there are personal events and impersonal events that happen to us on a daily basis. Our major mistake, Lori, is becoming deeply involved in impersonal events. That is our biggest mistake, because most of these events, the adversity that we encounter on a daily basis isn't our own. It's happening to someone else. So it's an impersonal event, not directly to us. I like to say in my workshops, you know, if I were to I'd ask somebody to stand up and I said, if I slap you, it's a personal event to you. To everybody around you, it's an impersonal event because they weren't the one who got slapped. So we have to, but do you get involved in that? There's a way of saying, okay, what can I control about this event? I can call the police. Someone can call the police and tell them that I slapped this particular person. That's an effective course of action. There was battery involved. So that's an effective course of action. And people do that every day when they see accidents. They call a 911. Okay? If you don't call 911 and nobody calls 911, that is an unsuccessful response to an event, because you could have actually done something to help those involved. So where I'm going to with this is, this situation is happening now in Italy, where people, 120, 130 people have died, there's going to be a UN organization. There is one, UNHCR, I think, that happens to go to places around the world where this happens. And the positive course of action for me would be to go on their website, see if they're involved in that, and donate some money to help them help those people on the ground. That's what I did with the refugee crisis. And what that does, giving makes you feel really good, that you've taken action, you've become part of something, and you've helped. You haven't just stood on the sidelines and lamented about it and gotten upset about it and talked about it on social media and with 100 of your best friends. You actually have taken an action. And then after you've taken that action, you let it go. Because I guarantee you, if not that same day, and this week we've had two earthquakes, we've had flooding, we've had in Louisiana, there's going to be another event right around the corner. So instead of and if we were to only deeply immerse ourselves, invest our personal resources of time and energy watching television, watching the unfolding of these events, watching every news report, we wouldn't have a life and we wouldn't be happy, because we'd always be feeling sad about other events that we can't control. So we have to bring it back to, you know, in my moment, what's the most important to me? There's nobody says you can't be happy because something bad is happening in the world. Do you see my point? It's kind of simple.
Well, you know what's interesting? You made me think of this. This is, of course, you know, 9/11 we could talk about all day, and the impact there. But, you know, about 8 years ago, there was a shooting on campus, several shootings on campus at Virginia Tech, if you remember that. And I would tell you, beside 9/11, I was involved in the reading of that, about him, about the situation so deeply, Michael, and I'd never done this before, that I'm not a dark person. We all, you know, have sides to us. I literally felt darkness. I had to shut everything down. I am talking about TV, media,
right?
Everything, to say, oh my God, what's happening here? I don't know what made me so intrigued with learning about the situation and him, but I've never felt that before. But instinctively, I knew, and this was many years ago, that I had to move out of that. And you're right. I mean, you can still be. Some of us, you know what that word is, Michael? It's the guilt. Sometimes I think I'm on Facebook and I see so many causes, especially because I'm very, very partial to dogs. And I have one dog and I'm very, you know, into animal safety, welfare, et cetera. And there are so many that need help. It's interesting the balance you have to try to do, because really I want to help every one of them. All I really can do is maybe help one, because that's all I can do right now. And sometimes I think that word guilt gets in the way, and we have to manage that guilt. And we have to accept that there's only so much we can do, right?
That's true. And that's an awesome example. Absolutely awesome example, because there's the ASPCA commercial, right? That comes on all the
kills
sad
me.
Dogs. Oh yeah, it kills me too. I look at there, my girlfriend, and say, "Oh God, turn that commercial off." But let me tell you something. We just adopted a cat from the county.
I love it.
Yeah, and it was a 2-year. The cat had sat there for a month, and it's little small. Nobody would adopt this cat, and it's an awesome calico, 11-pound, 2-year-old female calico. She's awesome. My Aussie Shepherd was a rescue 11 years ago. She's the most awesome dog ever. But here's the answer to your question. You see the commercial. You feel bad. All you have to do if you want to support all the animals in this country is donate $19 a month to the ASPCA. And that money goes to help those animals. Okay? So
yeah.
It's kind of like it's you don't have to carry the guilt of it. You have to recognize that you can't save every animal in the world. It's not humanly possible. You know, if you were a billionaire, you could probably buy the ASPCA and do it yourself, and or buy a bunch of property or an island somewhere. And hey, everybody come over here. Bottom line is that you have a limitation. But again, let's get back to that there are two successful responses that I outline in my book. Two successful responses, and there are only two successful responses to any and every situation you ever, ever, ever face in your life. I document them in the book, and they're very, very, very simple. And here's the reason why you know you have a successful response, because they emit positive feelings and emotions within you. Feelings of hope, optimism, love, happiness, empathy, sincerity, kindness, love, happiness, fulfillment, joy, passion, compassion. These are positive feelings and emotions. And if you do the right thing, you will feel that way. If you respond in a negative way, in an unsuccessful way, I like to say, because I don't believe there's anything negative. If you respond in an unsuccessful way, you will feel the guilt, anger, resentment, bitterness, the hopelessness. And all those other negative feelings and emotions, bitterness, resentment, anxiety, fear, all those things, that's what you'll be feeling. And you know that you did it, because most people, that's what they feel when they try to control something that they cannot control. They try to take action on things that of which they can have no effect. And it's akin to beating your head up against the wall. So if you stand around thinking, oh gosh, I feel so bad, I feel so guilty, because I can't help these people, these dogs, these animals. And if you wanted to, if you have that capability to give $19 a month, and if everybody in the country did it, they'd be overwhelmed with dollars and the funding they needed to do whatever it is that they do to help these animals. So you've got to always think, what can I do? What can I control about the situation? I can't control the animals, what happens to them, what other people do to them. I can't control any of that. What I can control is, again, thoughts, words, action. So I can take that action or not take that action. And you may, if you don't choose not to take that action, which is something you can do, you may take some other action. You may decide to go down and buy a bag of dog food and donate it to your local ASPCA shelter or animal shelter. That is also a positive thing that you can do. So there are many things. You just have to sit down and start thinking about the positive things, actions that you can take that can help that situation. And even if it's no money, which is volunteering, they might need volunteers. So you might go down and spend a few hours volunteering at the shelter. That's a positive course of action that makes you feel awesome.
Sure does. You're right. I mean, there are so many things you can do. And if you are one of those type people that have that guilt, I think we just have to let ourselves free of that. And again, that's something oftentimes people have to work on. It doesn't happen overnight. You just have to take small steps to do it. And that's so true. what I, What I'm hearing so far is perception, which is absolutely true. I can look at a green wall and say, that's the most beautiful green ever. You can look at the same wall and say, that is the ugliest green I've ever seen. So right. We know that perception is reality. That's an old saying. We know that that's true. Then the second is, here's the situation. I like how you say not just action. I'm a big believer in the law of attraction too, and only take action if it's inspired action. Don't take action if it's forced, if it doesn't feel right. So I like words, thought, and action, because you have those choices to say, you know what, I'm going to think in a way that moves energy in the right direction. I'm going to say things that help people. And if you decide, you may do something if it's inspired. So to me, you know, that's a wonderful, the concepts are wonderful. To do. Again, sometimes it takes practice. I know personally for me, I've been working at this for 15 years, and the person I was 15 years ago, I'd say, you know, she looks pretty darn different. So yes, it can happen.
Oh yeah. So. It's, you know, small baby steps. The third step in the process of zero adversity is to simply let it go. And there in the book, I outline 9 different things to keep in mind that can help you let go of a situation. I like to say one of them is very simple. I call it the 24-hour rule. The 24-hour rule is, if whatever happens to you personally isn't going to matter to you or anyone else in 24 hours, then don't dedicate the time and energy and personal resources to it. Just let it go. Let it go. Do what you need to do with it if something needs to be done, and let it go. Because I know people that carry things with them. And the whole idea is, from a inner conversation, self-talk perspective, it's important to enforce within you the positive "I can," and instead of saying something's difficult, hard, tough, I just wrote a piece for a magazine called "The Seven Words That Hold You Back," and the 7 words that hold you back, it's very simple. You've got people's hard, impossible, tough, can't, never, and try. Those words do not belong in your self-talk vocabulary. When you're referring to you and what you are doing, when you call something tough or hard or impossible, you basically erect a wall that you have to climb in order to achieve whatever it is you're looking to achieve. It's a mental wall, but it's a way of that we it's sort of an out for ourselves. Oh, that's tough. It's tough to do this. It's hard to do that. And when I speak with people who want to get their inner conversation together and they're having a crisis, in crisis, the first thing to fall apart is your inner conversation. Because you'll start saying things like, oh, I could never do that. Oh, it's so hard for me. It's so tough for me to get up and do that. No. It's not tough. It's only tough because you say it's tough. It's not hard. It's hard because you keep saying it's hard. Why don't you say, this is a challenging thing for me to do? This is a word that I put in there. It's one word, challenging. Instead of saying hard, tough, impossible, can't, never, try, whatever, say, call whatever it is you need to do, whatever action you need to take, a challenge. A challenge. That's simply it. It's a challenge. Because a challenge denotes that you have, that it's something that can be overcome. It's something that can be, it's an action word. It's challenge. You know, never and tough are not action words. Those are basically sit back, and those are doubtful words, the words that like perhaps in a conversation, maybe, you know, I might be able to try and do this thing, but I know it's going to be hard and tough. That kind of conversation, if you listen to some of the most successful people in the sports world, all the way through people who have lost an arm to a shark or an alligator, who've lost their various body parts, arms, legs, whatever, in the Iraqi or Afghanistan war, and have climbed out of that situation. Their language is, this situation, this event doesn't define me. I am this. I can that. I will, and I have this. That is positive self-talk. That's encouraging self-talk. The inner conversation we have has a lot to do with whether we are happy in the moment. And it has to be congruent. It has to be congruent with your intentions, congruent with what you really want in life, your goals. And as far as the law of attraction goes, law of attraction is not going to happen if your inner conversation is not congruent.
Right.
With that. I'm solarist to it. So there's a process there. The methodology is simple. Perceive, respond, let go. If you approach everything, this is why when someone makes the mistake of calling me a motivational speaker or whatever, I say, look, I can motivate you. I can motivate you to be happy. I can give you 100 stories that will make you everything from laugh to cry to say, oh my gosh, that is so amazing. However, what I've given you is a momentary look at what happiness feels like. The work comes when you actually apply a process. But there's no process with motivation. The stories don't give you the process. You aren't that person. So this whole analogy situation where if I can do that, you can do this. You should be able to too as well. I mean, I'm like, you know, that time frame is pretty much over. Now we're going to have to employ some serious processes, simple methods of action that help you achieve the goal you're looking for. That's why I wrote this book, Perceive, Respond, Let Go. That's the method. I outline it there and give numerous examples of that. But my main goal is to get people to start perceiving their lives and what goes on in their lives in a different way, to let them know there's a choice. When the house burns down, you don't have to see it as the worst thing ever. It could be that if you want it to be, or it could be a new beginning for you. You didn't like that laundry room size anyway. Now you can make it bigger. You didn't really want to keep all that stuff. Now you can go out and buy new stuff. You can make this house exactly the way you want it to. My girlfriend from college, I met her about 5 or 6 years after we left, and she had told me, she says, I got this call one day. She was living in the Bay Area, and she had bought a house. And, you know, in the Bay Area, you get a shack for like hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so she said, my house burned down. It was burning. It was on fire. And I rushed home, and it had burned to the ground. And I said, really? She says, yeah. And she says, you know the great thing about it? I said, what? She says, I got to put what I want on that lot. And I'm going, yeah, that's awesome.
She gets it.
Yeah. I said, you get it. That's a zero adversity pioneer in my view. That's what a zero adversity pioneer is. Somebody who rises above the 3D world of fear, worry, anxiety, concern, stress, and distress, and says, I see this differently. And everybody has that capability. They just have to choose it. They have to choose to actually see it in a different way, to rise above it and examine the different ways that it can be seen. And once they do that, they'll be able to pick the positive aspect of things, because bottom line is they're going to have to do something regardless. So why sit around and fight it or lament about it? It doesn't make any sense.
Well, you know, when you say letting it go, that's also something what I have to do is I'll notice if I'm getting caught up in something. I think mm-hmm. the first part for me is to get conscious about it. Like yeah. I'll say, mm-hmm. you know what, let go. First of all, I have to tell myself in general to keep myself healthy. You know, we have to let go of things. And then I've noticed over the years, I could feel myself getting caught up in something. Mm-hmm. But now I catch myself and I'll go, wait a minute. And I'll say, is this really something you want to keep going with? Is this? And it's probably 100% of the time that I'll go, nope, done. Now, that's how I catch myself. But I literally mm-hmm. have to sometimes talk to myself. I'm sure you're to the point where you can let you are so there. I mean, you can let things go when you know you need to, in the time you need to, where I think sometimes our listeners, we've talked about this kind of thing. And I know personally, I still have to have that conversation to go, whoa, you just went off track. Is this really worth it? Of course it never is. Gone. So I'm happy to say at least I'm to that point. You know, because that'll just eat you up. It'll cause physical and mental problems.
Right.
Stress is the number one killer. I mean, letting go is so much more powerful than just those two words. It's really, it's a huge part of life that will make it much more pleasant if you could just do it.
The point you're making is, again, spot on. And it's because and by the way, I applaud you for, number one, having the wherewithal within you to take steps forward, because that's what this is. I mean, nobody ends up. And by the way, I automatically, my inner conversation is, you know, probably 98% of what I wanted, but the 2%, is what I have to really pay attention to. And I have to make sure that that the language I'm using and the thoughts that I have about myself with regard to my goals and intentions and dreams in my life is right there. And because, you know, it's a constant process of awareness. And that's really where you're at right now, is you're aware and you're catching yourself. And that really is the process. That's the process of taking one foot and putting it in front of the other. I'm still doing it. You're still doing it. I don't perceive myself to be better at it than anybody else. I'm not above anybody else. I think we're all in the same pool together. It's just that what I've learned to do is what I convey in the book, and when I talk to people on a one-on-one level, I say, you know, this is your life. Okay, no rehearsals, no nothing. Things happen, and things are always going to happen. This is an endless stream of events from the time you're born to the time you pass away, and it's up to you. It's how you handle those events, I should say, that really determines the quality of the happiness that you experience in your life. And your perceptions have a lot to do with that, and then your responses to that. Letting go, yeah, I can say so. I can let something go, but that doesn't mean I don't think about it a little later on. And I can tell you that the death of one of my best friends from 1983 hit me hard. And I was in California when I got the call on a trip from a sister who'd been trying to reach me for almost a week. Okay, because she didn't have access to my phone number. So he had passed away a week before, and he lived in the same town as me. You know, but here's the thing. I want to say this because grieving is people have a great, big fear of death and dying. The interesting thing is when someone I know passes away, I remember one thing, because this is something that I do all the time. I always tell the people I care about how I feel about them in the moment. I thank them. I tell them I love them. I give them hugs, because I never know. I don't take anything for granted. Anything can happen. So I make sure that the moments I spend with people are quality moments. They're experiential, even for only a moment, if that's the case. I never let my girlfriend leave the house in the morning without giving her a hug, a kiss, telling her how much I love her, and that I hope she has a great day. This happened to somebody close to me here. He did that to his wife, and literally 5 minutes later, she had passed away because she had been T-boned right out at the street, that same highway that we all turn out on, and she was gone. So it's things like this happen. Nobody knows when they're going to happen or how, but that's how I deal with that situation. And I have another one in my book about my best friend from high school who I flew out to California and took to the last high school reunion he's been to and that I've been to since. And I said, you need to go. He had been through radiation. He had had a brain tumor. He was disfigured. His face was disfigured. And he couldn't even eat with us, basically. I mean, but you know what? I said, you put on that white suit that you have, pal, because I'm flying out there and I'm picking you up and we're going to this high school reunion. And it was one of the most incredible times that he had had since high school, because this is the high school basketball star, right? And but he was a man who was blessed with incredible love, patience, empathy, sincerity, and he was a role model for that. And so we have these opportunities. What we have to do is we have to take advantage of them. We have to take advantage of these moments. Happiness is something, and there's in tremendous happiness that's generated when you express yourself to another human being, when you're experiencing the relationalness between both of you, whether it's just a friend or somebody who's deeply, deeply closer to that. And I remember this whenever I go out. If I go to the post office and I'm buying stamps, I'm looking the person in the eye and I'm giving them incredible reverence. I feel such reverence for that person, for what they do. And kindness. Treat them, say hi to them, call them by name. Because people are people. We all have blood. We all have feelings. And sometimes we can become zombies in our jobs because we encounter such ugliness. However, I'm the person who wants to be that ray of sunshine for whoever it is that I come across.
Me too. Yeah, I could really relate to you on that. I do the same thing.
Yeah, that's happiness is that continually generates and sustains the happiness throughout the day for me, you know, because this show is about happiness. And those listeners that you have are deeply interested in being happy. And you are a prime example for them. And in the examples that you're giving me about how you're living your life, you know, in my view, you know, you're a zero adversity pioneer. That's what you are, because that's what you practice. You take a step back and you look at things. We have to take a breath. You know, breathing resets the central nervous system, and you take a breath, and when things happen, and just don't simply respond or react with, in a patterned way. It is possible, and it's actually not as hard as we think. It's only as hard as we make it.
You know, and when you talk about death, it is something that most people feel. They have that feeling of out of control. And what you're saying makes so much sense, because you're doing what you can do. You're doing such a good thing by all of us do this, by being kind. Anybody who listens to the show probably does this. You're kind to other people. You appreciate your loved ones, the things that you're doing. It is all you can do, but it is the best thing you can do. And it's so meaningful, especially in those situations where there is no action you can take about that death. You cannot bring that person back. So, you know, it's very healthy. And, you know, it's just nice to hear these things again told to us in such different ways by our guests, because, you know, we bring it to light. Sometimes something clicks with one listener and another guest says it and it doesn't click. And so sometimes I love having this topic, because it brings people to light in the way they receive it. They may not get it one way, but they get it another way. And so, you know, I'm very happy, you know, this concept just makes so much sense. And, you know, you talked about past, you talked about your friend who had passed away, and you talked about a past girlfriend. What about past adversity? Like, can you go back and clean that up, or what can you do?
Awesome question. This is the answer to that. All you have to do is go back. And I did this with my girlfriend who died in 1982. That was the first time I'd encountered in my life someone that I loved very dearly passing away and within a 3-week time frame. Actually, I saw her, then she went to visit her parents and had an asthmatic attack and was in a coma for 3 weeks. And the last time I saw her was when she was in a coma. What's interesting is that it took me till 1992. I visited her gravesite a couple of times. I was grieving. And one of the things that hit me, and I talk about it in the book, is that clearing past adversity, you follow the same steps. You literally go back and examine the event and you ask yourself, what could I have done? I could have done nothing to help prevent her passing. Okay, great. What did I do? What did I do? I went back. I went to visit her as soon as I possibly could, as the hospital allowed me. And I had a conversation with her in the coma. I made my peace. But here's the interesting thing. The last time I saw her, we had a very, very wonderful time together, a moment we shared some things. So you start thinking about all the good things that happened. She was an artist. We had a business together. You start focusing on the positive things that you had that you shared, and not the fact that they're gone. It's a matter of perspective. If you just simply see the event as a sad event and that's what defines your relationship, your thought process about this person, then you will be sad for a very long period of time. However, if you turn around and shift your perspective to the good things and start thinking about and laughing in your and maybe out loud or in your mind about the good times that you had with this person, this individual, what you shared together, it will not only make you feel better about him, but your focus will be on the positive side. And then you can, as far as a response, there's nothing else that you can do. You just simply have to skip to letting go. And so from that perspective, I was able to reconcile that event by simply letting it go. And by realizing that we focus a lot. One of the 9 things I put in the book is aside from the 24-hour rule about letting go is the how and why. This is really, really huge. I was focusing on the how and why. And when I shifted my focus away from the how and why and towards the what, which was what we shared, then it was a lot easier for me to simply let that event go. It was just a thing in my past, an experience in my past. The how and the why trips more people up than anything else. Italy has an earthquake. People focus on how and why could that building have fallen? Don't they have structural engineers over there? Don't they have that? You know what? That doesn't matter. How and why trips more people up than anything else and prevents people from letting go of things that happen in their life. Car accidents, whatever. Was the car... And then here's the other thing, because I'm not a person, a complainer. I don't sue people. I don't care what it is. I don't sue people. I don't blame people for other things that happen because I was partly to blame because I was in that time, in that space, in that moment. I chose to be in that moment. So whatever happens, it happens. And I had a part in it. So I'm a person that believes in 100% responsibility for my own actions, my own part in whatever happens. So the how and the why is something that we have to be very cognizant of being tripped up by. Mm-hmm. And the worse the event, the more the how and the why happens to get in the way of us letting go, because it drags us down the road, so to speak. And it keeps 1 foot in the event. And we're never able to let it go, to get both feet out of the event. And it literally, as I said, your perception guides, it actually writes the script for what follows. So if you're unable to let go of someone, that whatever the negative feelings and emotions you have about the event, which are generally centered around the how and the why and the who, if somebody else was part of causing that particular tragedy or that particular event, we're always going to have 1 foot in it. We're always going to have those negative feelings and emotions, and it's going to lead to the distress being trying to control something we cannot, which is the actions of another, or actions that have occurred that cannot be changed. How and the why ties us to that. And we have to sever that cord of how and why and start focusing in a different direction. So it's easy to clear once you realize that that's what you're doing, and then shift your focus.
And, you know, the toughest thing with death and letting go, and to be clear about this, I know with my mom, when she passed away, when we say letting go, we're talking about moving on from grief and having the experience of that loved one in your life in a different way, meaning right. Thinking of the good memories, smiling, mm-hmm. Oh, this reminds me of her. That's what we mean by that. We understand mm-hmm. that, you know, grieving is there. So, you know, this went so darn fast. We are literally going to have to wrap up in about a minute. So what I'd like to do is, first of all, I would tell everybody, please get out there and get Zero Adversity, 3 Steps to Freedom, Fulfillment, and Creating an Authentic Life. And Michael, in the next minute or two, tell us what's going on with you. How do we find you? What social media do you use? And what's coming up for you in your life?
Well, michaeljruss.com is my website. I publish a blog there for Zero Adversity Training, which includes everything about the Zero Adversity Method. I have something called the Zero Adversity Club where it's a free video I send out anywhere between 1.5 to 3 minutes every Monday. And it gives you one little concept, idea, or a life tool that you can use that week to make your life better, something you can practice that week or focus on that week. And I've been doing it now for about, I think, 500 days. 500, well, since actually the beginning of 2015, I've been doing it. So I think it's somewhere around 70 weeks or so. But social media, I generally Instagram, Zero Adversity on Instagram. As far as Twitter is concerned, it's at Michael J. Russ, M-I-C-H-A-E-L, J as in Joseph, Russ, R-U-S-S. And I also have, in terms of that, that's LinkedIn, same thing, Michael J. Russ. And I feel inquiry at MichaelJRuss.com, inquiry at MichaelJRuss.com. If they have a question about either some adversity that they've experienced, I do consultations, and the first half hour is totally and completely free because I want to make sure that I can help this whoever it is that contacts me because I will simply say, you know, if I can't help someone, then I want to be honest and tell them. I live an authentic life, which means honesty, ethics and morals. And that's something that is very, very, very close to my heart. It's just the way I live my life. So michaeljruss.com. My book, Zero Adversity, is on Amazon. It's on Barnes & Noble. They can just type in Zero Adversity and they'll find it, 3 Practical Steps. And I would love to hear their comments about what they think after reading it or listening to the audio. It's in an audio, paperback, or ebook.
Wonderful. Well, I hope everybody gets out there and gets Michael J. Russ's book, Zero Adversity. And it's been wonderful having you on the show. It's been such good conversation and just great to have you here. So once again, Michael J. Russ at it's michaeljruss.com, correct?
That's correct. Thank you so much.
It's okay, been a great. Pleasure. Great, Michael. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, dear. Bye-bye.
Great. Bye-bye. And we'd like to thank our sponsors of the Happiness Hangout, AirServe of Strongsville and AirServe of Mentor. It's www.airserve.com. And Thriving Out Loud, The Magic Happens magazine at www.themagichappensnow.com. You can check me out at happinesshangout.net. And also, I'm a blogger for yourtango.com. Just look up Lori Peters. Thanks again, Happiness Hangout listeners. See you next time.
Hi, this is your host, Lori. Want to get more happiness? Check out all the free readings, activities, and my blog at my website. Want to learn how to deal with life's challenges from your positive core? Check out Empowering Yourself to Happiness class, done totally online. You can find it all at www.happinesshangout.net. www.happinesshangout.net. Come explore and feel better wherever you are. This is Lori Peters with the Happiness Hangout. I provide presentations on happiness and well-being to businesses, schools, and anyone involved in wellness and professional days. Check out tons of free resources and activities also at my website, www.happinesshangout.net. Feel better wherever you are. Help us grow the Happiness Hangout Show. Become a sponsor. Businesses and nonprofits, get your info out there to thousands of my listeners all over the world for just pennies. Individuals can also sponsor one or more shows, and you get a shout out to your favorite charity. Several packages available. Come see what you get and put out there what's important to you. Go to www.happinesshangout.net. www.happinesshangout.net for more information.